Well, hello, boys and girls, and welcome to Reading with Rick again here. It's a Friday night. 1 week from today is Christmas Day. Can you believe it? It's that time already. All right, it's time for a couple of more Christmas stories tonight, and we've got a couple of really good ones to start. We're going to have some characters you're probably pretty familiar with. Curious George and Winnie the Pooh. They're going to be the subjects of tonight's first two stories on Reading with Rick. And then, after a short break, we'll have our third story. And this is called Clorinda's Gifts, about a girl that doesn't quite know what to give anybody for Christmas. And she's all worried because she doesn't have any money for presents to give to people. But then she finds out that she does have some gifts to give. So that's called Clorinda's Gifts. And that's going to come up on our third story tonight. So should we get started here? I think so. Let's start with Merry Christmas, Curious George. You know who Curious George is, don't you? The little monkey that is always getting into things with his friend, the man in the yellow hat. Well, let's start. Merry Christmas, Curious George. This is George. He lived with his friend, the man with the yellow hat. He was a good little monkey and always very curious. Today, George was visiting a Christmas tree farm. "You can help me pick out the perfect tree for our home," his friend told him. "Keep close to me while we look." George promised to be good, but little monkeys sometimes forget. The Christmas tree farm had more trees than George had ever seen. He found a very nice one right away. But then, another caught his eye. George could not resist climbing up the tallest tree to get a better view. He looked for the man with the yellow hat, but his friend was nowhere in sight. Two men tromped into the clearing. "There's our tree," one man told the other. The men cut down the tree and they loaded it onto a big truck, along with George. George held on tightly. He saw the man with the yellow hat as the truck drove away, but the truck was going too fast. George could not jump off. He was scared, but he was still a little curious. Soon, the truck stopped in front of a children's hospital. George peeked out of the branches as the men carried his tree inside. The hospital was a busy place. George jumped out of the tree. There was lots here to see and do. He looked at some interesting pictures. The X-rays. He found a jacket and tried it on. It was a doctor's coat. He played on a trampoline, which was really a hospital bed. And he even went for a ride on a speedy little cart. What fun! Then George spotted something very interesting. His tree! George knew that Christmas trees were supposed to have tinsel and twinkling lights and shiny ornaments. But his tree was empty. George thought and thought, and then he had an idea. Next, George noticed a pile of gifts in the corner of the room. The gifts looked pretty, but George was curious. Could he make them look even prettier? This red bow would look much better on the green box, and the name tags might look nicer on different packages, too. Just then, a nurse arrived, and what did she see? A monkey, and he's making a big mess. She picked up George and carried him away from the tree. A group of children crowded around the nurse. They were all patients at the hospital. Even though it was almost Christmas, the children were not smiling or looking happy. "Come along," the nurse said, picking George up. I'd better get you out of here before you can ruin anything else." A girl with a cast stared at George's tree, and suddenly she giggled. "Look," she said, "it's my X-ray." A boy laughed, "and there's the balloon from my room." All the children started chattering and laughing as they looked at George's funny decorations. "Can't he stay for the party?" a boy asked the nurse. "We don't mind about the gifts. It'll be fun to sort them out." "Please let him stay, please," the other children chimed in. When she saw how happy the children looked, the nurse looked happier too. I suppose he can stay, she said, if he promises to help fix the tree. George was happy to help. The children helped too. Some of them returned George's decorations while others handed George the real ornaments. He scampered up and down, stringing lights and hanging tinsel. Being a monkey, he was good at that sort of thing. He was also good at making the children laugh. When the tree was finished, George helped open the gifts. He was having such a good time that he completely forgot that he was lost. Until the man with the yellow hat hurried into the room. "There you are, George," he cried. "I followed that truck all the way here." George was very happy to be reunited with his friend. The nurse invited them both to stay for milk and cookies.
"Ho, ho, ho, did someone mention milk and cookies?"
A man in a red suit walked into the room, his belly jiggling. He was holding a beautiful golden star. George's eyes widened. It was Santa Claus.
"Who would like to put the star on top of the tree?" Santa asked.
"George," the children cried at once. "Let George do it." And George scurried up the tree one last time, and he put the golden star in place carefully. And they all said, "Merry Christmas, Curious George." And that is Merry Christmas, Curious George. A nice story about a funny little monkey. Now let's talk about another favorite character. And this one is called Merry Christmas, Winnie the Pooh. Merry Christmas, Winnie the Pooh. One snowy Christmas Eve, Winnie the Pooh looked up and down, in and out, and all around his house. "I have a tree, some candles, and lots of decorations," he said to himself, "but something seems to be missing." Suddenly, a soft knock sounded on Pooh's door. Perhaps whatever Pooh was missing was just outside. Pooh opened the door. A small snowman stood shaking on his front doorstep.
"Hello, Pooh," the snowman said through chattering teeth and a shivery, quivery, but oh-so-familiar voice.
"I do like Christmas, but I wish my ears wouldn't get so very cold."
Pooh invited the snowman in. After much melting by Pooh's cozy fireplace, the snowman looked less like a snowman and more like Pooh's best friend, Piglet.
"My," Pooh said, happy to see a friend where there used to be a snowman.
"My," Piglet said, now warm enough to notice Pooh's glowing Christmas tree.
"Are you going to string popcorn to decorate your tree?" he asked.
"I had popcorn and string," Pooh admitted, looking at the popcorn crumbs, "but now there's only string."
"That's okay," Piglet said with a laugh. "We can use the string to wrap presents you're giving."
And at that, something began to tickle the brain of the little bear.
"I forgot to get presents," Pooh exclaimed.
Pooh had known he was missing something, but he had no idea it was...
"Don't worry, Pooh," Piglet said, trying to smile bravely. "It's the thought that counts."
Soon, Piglet left for his own home. He had his own Christmas preparations to finish. Pooh didn't know what to do about the forgotten presents, but he did know where to find help. Pooh grabbed his hat and a scarf, bundling up to trek all the way to Christopher Robin's house.
"Hello," Pooh called, knocking on Christopher Robin's door.
"Come in, Pooh," Christopher Robin said, smiling as he let his friend inside. "Why do you look so sad on the most wonderful?" In his excitement at seeing Christopher Robin's Christmas decorations, Pooh forgot all about the presents again.
"What are those?" he asked, pointing to some stockings that were hanging above the fireplace.
"Those are stockings to hold Christmas presents," Christopher Robin explained to his friend. Now Pooh was even... Luckily, the Bear of Little Brains was smart enough to have a good friend. Christopher Robin happily gave Pooh stockings for himself and all his other friends. Pooh thanked Christopher Robin and hurried off to deliver the stockings.
"I'll get everyone presents," said. "The stockings come first."
With a small note that said, "From Pooh," he left the stockings for Piglet, Tigger, Rabbit, Eeyore, Gopher, Kanga, Roo, and Owl. Later, back in his own comfy house, Pooh tried to think of presents, but sleepy Pooh's thinking soon turned into dreaming.
The next morning, Pooh was awakened by a big and bouncy knock at his door. Sleepily, Pooh opened the door. "Merry Christmas, Pooh!" his friend shouted. Pooh was about to apologize for not having any for Tigger, Rabbit, Gopher, Eeyore, Kangaroo, and Owl started thanking him. Pooh was confused but happy to see them all at his door, and he welcomed them inside. "No more cold ears with my new stocking cap," Piglet said.
"My stripedy sleeping bag is Tiggerific," Tiggerific
Duke Cover Rabbit chimed in. Gopher thanked Pooh for the rock-collecting bag, and Eeyore swished his toasty tail warmer with a slight smile. Owl announced that his windsock was perfect for figuring out which way the breeze was blowing, and Kanga and Roo loved their new song, but I'm not sure how it happened. "It's called Christmas, Buddy Bear," Tigger replied. Then everyone gave the
first day of the tree. The second day of Christmas, my true love gave to me. Three branch hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. On the fourth day of Christmas, three branch hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree.
On the fifth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
On the sixth day of Frisky Saline. Four calling birds,
three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree.
Under seven neighbor swans a swimming,
six geese a laying. Four calling birds,
three French hens, two turtle doves,
and a
on the eighth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me. Eight maids a milking,
six geese a laying. Four calling
birds, and a partridge in a pear tree.
My true love gave to me. Nine ladies dancing,
eight maids a milking,
seven, six geese a laying.
Calling
birds, three French hens, two turtle doves,
and a partridge in a pear tree.
On the tenth day of sleeping,
nine ladies dancing,
eight maids a-milking,
what? Six geese a-laying,
five,
four, three, two turtle doves,
and a partridge in a pear tree.
On the 11th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me. 11 pipers piping,
10 lords a-leaping,
9 ladies, 6 geese a-laying,
5,
4, 3, bum,
4 calling birds,
3 French hens,
2 turtle doves,
3,
on the 12th day of Christmas, my children I get to me, 12 drummers a-jamming,
11 pipers piping,
10 lords a-leaping,
9 ladies dancing,
8 maids a-milking,
7 swans a-swimming,
6,
bum, 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 four calling birds, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree.
That was wonderful, you guys. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Fozzie, you got it.
Oh, Miss Piggy and the Muppets and the 12 Days of Christmas. Okay, we're coming back now for our last story of the night here, and this is called Clorinda's Gift, written by L.M. Montgomery. Now, she was a woman from Canada, and her most famous book was called Anne of Green Gables, but this is called Clorinda's Gifts, and it's a fun little story. It's a sweet story about finding out that even without any money, you have the opportunity to give some very treasured gifts. So here we go with Clorinda's Gifts. "It's a dreadful thing to be poor a fortnight before Christmas," said Clorinda with the mournful sigh of 17 years. Aunt Emmy smiled. Aunt Emmy was 60 and spent the hours she didn't spend in a bed, on a sofa, or in a wheelchair. but Aunt Emmy was never heard to sigh. "I suppose it is worse than at any other time," she admitted. That was one of the nice things about Aunt Emmy. She always sympathized and understood. "I'm worse than poor this Christmas. I'm stony broke," said Clorinda dolefully. "My spell of fever in the summer and the consequent doctor's bills have cleaned out my coffers completely. Not a single Christmas present can I give. And I did so want to give some little thing to each of my dearest people, but I simply can't afford it." That's the hateful, ugly truth. And Clorinda sighed again. "The gifts are not the only ones we can give," said Aunt Emmy gently, "nor the best either." "Oh, I know it's nicer to give something of your own work," agreed Clorinda, "but materials for fancy work cost too. That kind of gift is just as much out of the question for me as any other." "That's not what I meant," said Aunt Emmy. "What did you mean, then?" asked Clorinda, looking puzzled. "And Aunt Emmy, have my meaning for yourself," she said. "That would be better than if I explained it. Besides, I don't think I could explain it. Take the beautiful line of a beautiful poem to help you in your thinking out. The gift without is bare." "I'd put it the other way and say, the giver without the gift is bare," said Clorinda with a grimace. "That is my predicament exactly. Well, I hope by next Christmas I'll not be quite bankrupt. I'm going into Mr. Kettle at Murray Bridge in February. He's offered me the place, you know." "Won't your aunt miss you terribly?" said Aunt Emmy gravely. Clorinda flushed. There was a note in Aunt Emmy's voice that disturbed her. "Oh, yes, I suppose she will," she answered hurriedly, "but she'll get used to it very soon. And I'll be home every Saturday night, you know. I'm dreadfully tired of being poor, Aunt Emmy, and now that I have a chance to earn something for myself, I mean to take it. I can help Aunt Mary, too. I'm to get $4 a week." "I think she would rather have your companionship than a part of your salary, Clorinda," said Aunt Emmy. "But, of course, you must decide for yourself, dear. It is hard to be poor. I know it. I am poor." "You poor?" said Clorinda, kissing her. "Why, you're the richest woman I know, Aunt Emmy, rich in love and goodness and contentment." "And so are you, dearie, rich in youth and health and happiness and ambition. Aren't they all worthwhile?" "Of course they are," laughed Clorinda, "only unfortunately Christmas gifts can't be coined out of them." "Did you ever try?" asked Aunt Emmy. "Think out that question, too, in your thinking out, Clorinda." "Well, I must say bye-bye and run home. I feel cheered up. You always cheer people up, Aunt Emmy. How gray it is outdoors. I do. Wouldn't it be jolly to have a white Christmas? We always have such faded brown Decembers." Clorinda lived just across the road from Aunt Emmy in a tiny white house behind some huge willows. But Aunt Mary lived there too, the only relative Clorinda had, for Aunt Emmy wasn't really her aunt at all. Clorinda had always lived with Aunt Mary ever since she could remember. Clorinda went home and upstairs to her little room under the eaves, where the great bare willow boughs were branching athwart her windows. She was thinking over what Aunt Emmy had said about Christmas gifts and giving. "I'm sure I don't know what she could have meant," pondered Clorinda. "I do wish I could find out if it would help me any. I'd love to remember a few of my friends at least. There's Miss Mitchell. She's been so good to me all this year and helped me so much with my studies. And there's Mrs. Martin out in Manitoba. If I could only send her something. She must be so lonely out there. And Aunt Emmy herself, of course, and poor old Aunt Kitty down the lane, and Aunt Mary, and, yes, Florence, too, although she did not treat me so meanly. I shall never feel the same to her again. But she gave me a present last Christmas, and so, out of mere politeness, I ought to give her something." Importantly, she just remembered that she would not have liked to say that last sentence to Aunt Emmy. Therefore, there was something wrong about it. Clorinda had that there was sure to be something wrong in anything that could not be said to Aunt Emmy. So she stopped to think it over. Clorinda puzzled over Aunt Emmy's meaning for 4 days and part of 3 nights. Then all at once it came to her. Or if it wasn't Aunt Emmy's meaning, it was a very good meaning in itself, and it grew clearer and expanded in meaning during the days that followed, although at first Clorinda shrank a little from some of the conclusions to which it led her. "I've solved the problem of my Christmas giving for this year," she told Aunt Emmy. "I have some things to give after all. Some of them quite costly, too. That is, they will cost me something. But I know I'll be better off and richer after I've paid the price. That's what Mr. Grierson would call a paradox, isn't it? I'll explain all about it to you on Christmas Day." On Christmas Day, Clorinda went over to Aunt Emmy's. It was a faded brown Christmas after all, for the snow had not come. But Clorinda did not mind. there was such thought at the most delightful Christmas day that ever dawned. She put the queer, cornery armful she carried down on the kitchen floor before she went into the sitting room. Aunt Emmy was lying on the sofa before the fire, and Clorinda sat down beside her. "I've come to tell you all about it," she said. Aunt Emmy patted the hand that was in her own. "From your face, dear girl, it will be pleasant hearing and telling," she said. And Clorinda nodded over your meaning. "Thought until I was dizzy. And then one evening it just came to me, without any thinking at all. And I knew that I could give some gifts after all. I thought of something new every day for a week. At first I didn't think I could give some of them. And then I thought how selfish I was. I would have been willing to pay any amount of money for gifts if I had had it. But I wasn't willing to pay what I had. I got over that, though, Aunt Emmy. Now I'm going to tell you what I did give. First, there was my teacher, Miss Mitchell. I gave her one of Father's books. I have so many of his, you know, so that I wouldn't miss one. But still, it was one I loved very much, and so I felt that that love made it worthwhile. That is, I felt that on second thought. At first, Aunt Emmy, I thought I would be ashamed to offer Miss Mitchell a shabby old book, worn with much reading and all marked over with Father's notes and pencilings. I was afraid it was queer of me to give her such a present. And yet, somehow, it seemed to me that it was better than something brand new and unmellowed, that old book which Father had loved and which I loved, and stood. I think it pleased her so much, the real meaning in it. She said it was like being given something out of another's heart and life. Then, you know, Mrs. Martin, last year she was Miss Hope, my dear Sunday school teacher. She married a home missionary, and they are in a lonely part of the West. Well, I wrote her a letter. Not just an ordinary letter. Dear me, no. I took a whole day to write it, and you would have seen the postmistress's eyes stick out when I mailed it. I just told her everything that had happened in Greenvale since she went away. I made it as newsy and cheerful and loving as I possibly could. Everything bright and funny I could think of went into it. The next was old Aunt Kitty. You know, she was my nurse when I was a baby, and she is very fond of me. But, well, you know, Aunt Emmy, I'm ashamed to confess it, but really I've never found Aunt Kitty very entertaining, to put it mildly. She's always glad when I go to see her, but I've never gone except when I couldn't help it. She's very deaf and rather dull and stupid, you know. Well, I gave her a whole day. I took my knitting yesterday and sat with her the whole time and just talked and talked. I told her all the Greenvale news and gossip and everything else I thought she'd like to hear. She was so pleased and proud. She told me when I came away that she hadn't had such a nice for years. Then there was Florence. You know, Aunt Emmy, we were always intimate friends until last year. Then Florence once told Rose Watson something I had told her in confidence. I found it out, and I was so hurt I couldn't forgive Florence, and I told her plainly I could never be a real friend to her again. Florence felt badly because she really did love me. She asked me to forgive her, but it seemed as if I couldn't. Well, my forgiveness. I went down last night and just put my arms around her and told her that I loved her as much as ever and wanted to be real close friends again. I gave Aunt Mary her gift this morning. I told her I wasn't going to Murray Bridge, that I just meant to stay home with her. She was so glad, and I'm glad too, now that I've decided so. Your gifts have been real gifts, Clorinda, said Aunt Emmy. Something of you, the best of you, went into each of them. Clorinda went out and brought her cornery. Forget you, Aunt Emmy, she said as she unpinned the paper. And there was a rose bush, Clorinda's own pet rose bush, all snowed over with fragrant blossoms. Aunt Emmy loved flowers. She put her finger under one of the roses and kissed it. It's as sweet as yourself, dear child, she said tenderly, and it will be a joy to me all through the lonely winter days. You've found out the best meaning of Christmas giving, haven't you, dear? Yes, thanks to you, Aunt Emmy, said Clorinda softly. That's Clorinda's Gifts by L.M. Montgomery. Well, those were some fun stories here tonight, and we were going to come back on Monday with another round of Christmas. We'll have another night on Tuesday. Wednesday is going to be a very special night on Reading with Rick. You won't want to miss that because Mrs. Prisvilla's fifth graders at Holy Trinity School in Piers, they are putting together some readings of their own. They're going to record some readings, and they're going to be the stars of Wednesday's Reading with Rick. So be sure to put that one on your calendar. So I am really looking forward to that. They're going to have a whole bunch of different stories they're working on and reading. And you're going to get to hear the fifth graders of Mrs. Prisbilla at Holy Trinity. So be sure to tune in for that on Wednesday night, and that'll be our last night. Well, that's going to be it for us here tonight. You have a great, great weekend, and we'll be back with you on Monday for more Read with Rick.
Silver and gold. Well, what do you think of our friend Cornelius? Seems all he thinks about is silver and gold.
Silver and gold, silver and gold. Everyone wishes for silver and gold. How do you measure its worth? Just by the pleasure it gives here on earth. Silver and gold, silver and gold, mean so much more when I see silver and gold decorations on every Christmas tree.
What's a Christmas tree without tinsel and pretty silver and gold decorations? Can't really call it a Christmas tree now, can you? And think of all the fun and joy that would be lost on Christmas morning if all the young folks didn't get to see that sparkling, happy tree.
Silver and gold, silver and gold, means so much more when I see silver and gold decoration on every Christmas tree.